News Talk 790, WNIS, the show that's all things CBD, all things hemp, all things cannabis. Dr. Denise Foster is here from Hemp Haven Wellness, just below the Virginia border in beautiful Moyock, North Carolina, 726 Carrotoke Highway. You can find her on the web at hemphavenwellness.com. She's open 7 days a week down there, Dr. D and her team of cannabis nurses, ready to see you Sunday through Wednesday, 11 a.m. till 7 p.m., an extra hour Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 11 a.m. till 8 p.m., and follow her on TikTok. She's on the TikTok now, everybody, at Hemp Haven Cannabis Nurse. That is her handle on TikTok. Welcome back to WNIS, Dr. Denise Foster.
Yay!
What's going on, buddy?
Oh, my goodness. Where to begin? We're moving out of the schizophrenic United States of cannabis and heading with a pace to the frenzied United States of cannabis, because things are quickly in motion. And this is all rolling off, of course, with President Trump's executive order coming in December 2025, when he proposed and made a directive to remove cannabis, marijuana, specifically the marijuana plant, from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. And things are happening and rolling out because of that. And the paradigm is shifting extremely quickly, even in Virginia. Right? Virginia is a highlight, because since 2020, we've passed legislation to 2021, I should say. Governor Northam got a legislation passed that implemented both the adult sales market and the medical marijuana sales market. And while we've had medical market since then, we've had a little snafu.
We didn't finish.
Thanks to the previous administration leadership. Right. It was horrible. So that is, again, in Virginia, ready to implement this. The jury's out. In fact, the senators and the House have all been working diligently and very rapidly now that legalization is coming through the Schedule 3 model. But in the state level, in Virginia specifically, we already know that Governor Spanberger is on board. She has been in support of cannabis adult use sales within Virginia, and that is now being implemented. And just a few days ago, March 4th, Virginia lawmakers are actually nearing the finish line. That are including proposals to legalize adult sales. This could happen by the end of this year. One of the proposals, I believe, from the House is that the date be November 1st this year to begin those sales, while the Senate is counter-proposing January 2027. Now, I'm sure that those are targets. I anticipate a lot of discussion.
It's
absolutely
ambitious.
There's a lot. For instance, one of the arguments is about how much taxes to assign to this type of model. We do know that when we move from a medical model, and I have some data here, of course, cha-ching, our little cha-ching. For instance, Montana, little old Montana. Who lives in Montana? Not many people. People who like the cold. But since their recreational sales, adult sales model was implemented in 2020, little old Montana has pulled in more than $1 billion worth of legal adult sales. $1 billion. And what they found, and this is where Virginia is going to go through some financial, economic changes, fiscal changes related to these taxes. They found, for instance, in Montana, there was approximately 40% of sales in 2022 were medical marijuana in Montana. But now that adult sales model has been put in place, they are now only about one-tenth of that $1 billion. So we're going to see some back and forth about the sales taxes, the excise taxes. What's interesting is we reported and discussed in one of our last shows is that while the previous iteration of these bills was moving through the House and Senate, there was an opt-out clause, meaning that if your jurisdiction, if your community voted and decided we don't want this in our community, they could do that. This particular formation of the bill leaves no opting out option. Meaning,
kind of like if you had dry counties for alcohol. It's the same concept, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
One of the considerations is right now they're still trying to decide on how to penalize consumers who buy from unlicensed sources. So one of my questions is, well, an unlicensed source is, are you going to buy it from your neighbor like you would maybe a farmer's market, a farmer's stand, et cetera, right? Mm-hmm. So we've got some issues there. Recriminalization of cannabis possession by people under 21 and making sales a class one misdemeanor for a first offense with a crime punishable by mandatory jail time for a second offense, and raising the penalty for unlicensed cultivation. Let me repeat that. This proposal may create penalties for unlicensed cultivation. I thought, Virginia, you could grow four plants.
Yeah, what would qualify as unlicensed
exactly.
cultivation?
So they're going to say this is a felony punishable by up to 5 years in jail. So,
and as it stands right now, you can grow, what is it, up to four plants?
Yes. Are we going backwards?
Yeah.
These idiots. Replace the concept of cannabis with alcohol in this example. You know, are we penalizing with jail for jail time for adolescents under 21 who are accessing alcohol? No, they're getting pretty much, you know, community service, and they're, you know, being in the released in the cognizance of their parents, right? School restrictions, etc. Are we worried that your neighbor is sharing their garage beer brew?
Yeah.
Right?
People homebrew.
Homebrew and share that. That's unlicensed, right? They don't have an ABC license. So we have a lot of work to do. Right now, one of my biggest pet peeves with this bill or with these procedures and proposed legislations is that first, a conversion fee will be allowing the existing medical cannabis dispensaries to provide a $15 million conversion fee, allowing them to convert their medical dispensary immediately to a adult use dispensary. How about that? So for $15 million, the medical dispensaries can just roll on out and start selling adult sales and capitalize on some of this billion-dollar Montana money, right?
Yeah.
And therefore, you know, where are the small businesses? Because they're first in line. They are going to receive the first dispensary licenses in the adult market, and their fee is $15 million to do that. Oh, my goodness. Another thing that is interesting here in Virginia, which is a right-to-work state, is that cannabis businesses would have to establish labor peace agreements and workers. We need some definition there, right? What's going on there? So we're still seeing some shadows, I guess, some hints of prohibition, some hints of, oh, this is uncomfortable. But back to the alcohol model. Alcohol has been sold in Virginia for how long?
Very long time.
Okay.
Hundreds of years.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Okay. They don't have any problem with you going in and buying a case of tequila and downing it in the parking lot because, of course, we now have a to-go cup law.
Right. Right.
And what are our main drivers of fatalities in motor vehicle accidents?
Alcohol.
We have already talked before on how we've been using the THC as a false compound for driving while impaired, because having THC in your system is not necessarily correlated with impairment.
Right.
Willie Nelson can never get stoned. No one smokes weed with Willie because of this. But the linear model that we see in alcohol has some roots in the more you drink, the more you get drunk. That doesn't happen with cannabis. And so we still have a lot of science to tease out, obviously a lot of legislative pieces. So I think the targets by January 1 are very aggressive. It'll be interesting to see what happens as this bill rolls out of committees and reiterations, revisions, and finally comes to up to. I project seeing a 2027 potentially, but not as fast as they want it. And that's just based on, we know how there's going to be a lot of pushback.
So the good news is it's happening.
It's happening.
It's a matter of when, not if.
It's happening. Another
the
bill
ball
that,
is rolling.
Yeah, another bill that has just moved through the Virginia House of Delegates is a bill to protect the rights of parents who use cannabis, marijuana, in compliance with state law. We're back to, you know, you can take home as much beer as you want, and no one questions how your parenting skills are. But we are now looking at a revision of a bill in which a parent or guardian on its own using and possessing cannabis in a single instance, where, of course, you can't prove this, and then we're going to tease out these definitions as well, shall not serve as a basis to deem a child abused or neglected unless other such facts establish that such possession or consumption causes or creates a risk of physical or mental injury to the child. Obviously, we want to keep children healthy, happy, protected, safe. I refer back to studies that have been done, and we've talked about this before, as you know, the kids are all right on our podcast, Cannabis Nurse Truths, how when parents are surveyed about their cannabis use, it's a co-parenting. It's my night to use, honey. You're going to have to watch the kids.
Yeah.
So,
which we already do with
we're
booze.
Back to alcohol. Do they worry about this and consider you to be abusive or neglectful if you're taking home a six-pack every night?
No, it's normal in a relationship to, let's say, you let the mom go out and have a ladies' night.
That's
mom
right.
Mom and her girlfriends go out and they party.
Mom maybe has the to dad, let go.
Maybe on the flip side of that, the dad goes out and has a beer with the boys. Whatever it may be, and you just that's how parenting works. You take turns.
Co-parenting.
You have to give the other person a break from time to time.
We have enough years, right? For instance, Colorado, California, Prop 219 in 2019, I'm getting my dates all mixed up, but the proposition in California that implemented the medical marijuana was really over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So we have data that support the fact that parents who are just like they're either, you know, drinking wine at home and the children are asleep, but not to the point where they can't hear the smoke alarm type model.
Yeah.
This is the same approach. And we're back to the bias. We're back to the stigma that parents who smoke weed are bad.
Right.
They are just bad parents. And finally, the law is catching up to that point. And with one of the most surprising things that's just come out in the last month from the Virginia Senate again. So Virginia itself has been very busy in the legalization market, in the parental rights market. We're also looking at changing the recriminalization and the sentencing market for those with the simple possession. Here's another piece that has come out of the Virginia Senate. They've approved a bill to provide legal protections for hospital workers to facilitate the use of medical marijuana for patients with terminal illnesses in their facilities, so long as cannabis is federally rescheduled. So they're waiting for this rescheduling event, but what this is tied to is building upon existing state law that already protects health professionals at hospices and nursing facilities that offer assisted living terminally ill patients in utilizing medical cannabis treatments. And these revisions would also expand to hospital workers. So we're seeing the cannabis paradigm move into the healthcare setting, starting at the hospice and palliative care, terminal care type. One of the sponsors of the bill came out and said that basically we know this is sponsored by Delegate Karen Keyes Gamara, a Democrat. I don't know where she's from. And with Delegate Irene Shin, another Democrat, that's requiring healthcare facilities to establish policies to address circumstances under which their eligible patients would be permitted to use medical cannabis. The science is now existing that has been on the books for decades, and we go into the science, especially in our podcast, Cannabis Nurse Truths. The legislation and regulations are now being you know, like a frenzy, like, you know, the octopus is now sweeping out across all the communities. And in this case, the healthcare communities are on notice that this is something that you will not be allowed to deny your, at least in this case, your terminally ill patients to use their medical marijuana. In this iteration of the bill, it's if it is approved federally to go from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. Because why? Again, legislation, federal laws are worded. The verbiage is that if it's a Schedule 1 drug, you ain't getting your reimbursement. We need to have that reimbursement. That's very important, very important. So everything is hinging upon Schedule 3, and Trump obviously, I guess, is a little busy somewhere else. His mind is not in cannabis land. Fine. But this is being implemented state by state. For instance, just a few days ago, Washington state senators, so not Washington, D.C., but Washington state senators approved a bill to let their terminally ill patients use medical marijuana in hospitals. So being a West Coasty state, some of the early adopters, they developed the perspective that this is working. We now have a large amount of data that support the fact that it is especially helpful. Here is a quote. I'm looking for the super quote here from the bill, in which facilities are now mandated that hospitals and other specific healthcare facilities allow terminally ill patients to use medical marijuana, and basically they are going to support the use of the quality of life for patients with a terminal condition with the intent of legislation to promote dignity and comfort for terminally ill patients while maintaining the integrity and safety of the healthcare environment. In this bill, the patient or their family slash caregiver would be responsible for acquiring and administering medical marijuana, removing the liability from the healthcare worker altogether, and smoking and vaping in the bill are completely prohibited, and the marijuana would have to be kept locked in a box, more than likely in the patient's room. So we're going to be, you know, constructing, you know, lock boxes in the room, just like we have needle boxes in the rooms. And then the patients are not allowed to share with anybody else. Seems pretty reasonable to me.
Yeah.
Seems very reasonable to me. The more that we are finding out how these compounds work, the more that we understand that this is this is not stopping. We are really in this new model where cannabis is recognized for what it does. Here's an issue where the FDA, just a few weeks ago, the head of the FDA said marijuana has benefit in medical conditions. Marijuana has benefit in medical conditions. Yes, it does.
Duh.
Yes, it does. And this is where now we are also seeing a movement. If you recall, I just mentioned that Trump had put together an executive order in December to move cannabis, marijuana-type cannabis, from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. In that same executive order, he ordered the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid to begin implementing a rule where CBD from hemp would be paid for by Medicare. And that is becoming a reality. Guess what? The federal agency has now finalized the rule for CBD Medicare coverage. And they are beginning a pilot program in April, which is less than 30 days away. So the Centers for Disease Control Secretary, Mark Markety, I think is his name. He has come out and said that the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services are now finalizing a rule that will allow their seniors on Medicare and even the Medicare Advantage plan, they will become eligible to receive CBD as early as April of this year with no charge if their doctors recommend CBD as a treatment. Well, hello. You can see why this frenzy has picked up, because the first federal agency that we never thought would fall, we thought the first federal agency that would fall would be the DEA. They're stalling, right? We've talked about how they're kicking the can down the road. The first federal agency to be falling is going to be the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, as CBD comes to a payment plan. It's interesting that this is not going to include anything other than hemp-derived cannabinoid CBD. You can't get this from marijuana. Why? Because marijuana right now is still Schedule I federally prohibited. What? But the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid are now piloting a program with Charlotte's Web. And I guess Charlotte's Web, we hear that a lot at the dispensary. Charlotte's Web is one of the first early adopters. And, of course, it's named Charlotte's Web for Charlotte Figge, the first pediatric cannabis patient in the United States who was receiving high CBD cannabis, marijuana, for her uncontrollable seizures. And so Charlotte's Web was selected to be partnering with the CMS, and they are helping with the Food and Drug Administration's into a pilot program that will develop practical framework, and here's the verbiage, with clear dosing, risk mitigation, and clear manufacturing expectations that will end up rewarding responsible companies like Hemphaven, and in the end, protect and serve the consumer. What an incredible time for cannabis that, you know, of my generation, the boomer generation, I never expected to see this.
Yeah,
we were raised with reefer madness.
Right.
Where's the reefer madness? Oh, the reefer madness is the government lied to us.
Yes. The government lied to us,
and while they hold the patent on cannabis cannabinoids specifically as antioxidants and neuroprotectants, they continued this stereotype, this stigma that parents who smoke weed are bad, and that translated through the community as, you know, you're just a stoner. That's all you do. You just smoke weed.
That's right.
There's some people like that, but you know what? We also have alcoholics who go out on the road and do some damage. So an interesting time, and we're going to talk more about some medical conditions and other things that are happening quickly across cannabis land.
She's Dr. Denise Foster from Hemphaven Wellness, just below the Virginia border in Moyoc, North Carolina, 726 Carrotoke Highway in Moyoc. On the web, hemphavenwellness.com. You can go stop by. They're open 7 days a week, Sunday through Wednesday, 11 a.m. till 7 p.m. An extra hour Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, 11 a.m. till 8 p.m. Follow her on TikTok at Hemphaven Cannabis Nurse on TikTok. And delivery available, too. Check out the website, hemphavenwellness.com. More coming up on WNIS. News Talk 790 WNIS. Dr. Denise Foster is with us for this live local Ask the Expert show from Hemphaven Wellness. HemphavenWellness.com is her website. She is just below the Virginia border in Moyoc, North Carolina, 726 Carrotoke Highway. Open 7 days a week, Sunday through Wednesday, 11 a.m. till 7 p.m., Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, an extra hour, 11 a.m. till 8 p.m. And the new thing to do is follow her on TikTok. She's got a new presence on there with a lot of cool videos at Hemphaven Cannabis Nurse. That is where to find her on TikTok, at Hemphaven Cannabis Nurse. And then again, that website, hemphavenwellness.com. Talking all things cannabis, all things hemp, CBD, THC. It's you and me, Dr. D.
Alphabet Sue.
I know. What's going on?
Great times in cannabis. And the government, obviously, Virginia government for sure, is coming to its senses, right? We're coming out of the reefer madness and moving into legislation that is both, obviously, public awareness, public safety, public health, but also focused on the medicinal sides. And this is an interesting report that just came out recently in the journal called Harm Reduction, the Harm Reduction Journal. And this report was a paper, a research in which they evaluated 19 commonly used drugs. And they considered 18 categories of harm. And those categories included, for instance, overdose death, long-term health damage, family disruption, crime, economic impact. And in this study, in the journal, Harm Reduction Journal, each drug was scored and then it was given a weight. So this was what they called an overall harm ranking. And they began to then compare that to the federal regulations, the federal classification of cannabis on the controlled substance list right now at Schedule 1. And they came to a conclusion. Marijuana and other drugs are not as dangerous as laws written half a century ago. So consider this. The Controlled Substance Act was implemented in 1970 under the Nixon administration. How long has it been since we've implemented a new scheduling of these drugs? Remember that fentanyl, the deadliest drug in our country right now, is a Schedule 2 drug. Because we do have use for fentanyl. Those of us who have worked in palliative and terminal hospice type care or even pain management, rehabilitation work, know that we can prescribe our patients fentanyl patches. So fentanyl, as long as it is controlled and scheduled under the Schedule 2 model, prescribed by a physician who has DEA privileges to prescribe that particular, you know, they've gone through the training, they understand their responsibilities, because it has what? The potential for overdose and fatality. In a very small amount. So they looked, the study looked to say, by placing cannabis in the most restrictive category at Schedule 1 while ranking fentanyl lower and leaving alcohol completely outside of the scheduling model.
Makes no sense.
Makes no sense. None. The U.S. policy implemented in the Nixon administration in 1970 has created a framework that is no longer reflective of scientific consensus or actual risk to the population. They call it a drug policy frozen in time. Or this is your brain on drugs and the drug policy is fried, right? Because that's what we grew up with. Yeah. This is your brain on drugs and marijuana was reefer madness and you know you're going to kill your neighbors to get it. The resources in this study, the recommendations were that resources should be focused on health and wellness and harm reduction and not incarceration and punitive type policies. We just talked about how if you apply alcohol in recriminalizing Virginia's access to cannabis, what are we doing? Why are we causing this punitive damage to people who want to use at least have the choice, I should say, to mm-hmm. use this something that is now being recognized for the power it has. So this is where the policies are now moving into health, public awareness, public safety, harm reduction. And that is our model in cannabis as medicine, is harm reduction. High schools, right, we're worried about adolescence and child access. We've gone over and over about how in every study, especially studies where they are conducting research in states where both adult and medical marijuana are legalized, the dispensaries do what? They card their dispensary customers 100%. And if you don't have a legal registered state, federal passport, you know, what's that new ID? What
Real ID.
If yeah. you don't have that, you're not allowed to buy. Mm, okay. Can you say that with alcohol, tobacco? And what is the illicit market basing their purchases on? Oh, I don't need an ID to buy it in the back alley.
Get a handshake.
Things are changing. Harm reduction in school districts. There's a new product out called the Halo Smart Sensor System that is being piloted in Florida schools because we know that vaping is one of the most serious considerations because these adolescents, these teens, yeah. are going to the smoke shops yeah. that sell tobacco. And now they have access to not only e-cigarettes, but they have access to hemp-derived vapes, not in Virginia.
Right.
But in other, on others, we card everybody in our dispensary. So if you visit us, whip it out. Because that's what you need in order to buy alcohol, isn't it?
Yep.
You don't care what you look like. You're going to show us a real ID. So in this Florida pilot program, this halo sensoring system is now being placed in high schools that can detect both e-cigarette vapor and cannabis vapor. And this is because this particular study showed that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration found that more than 1.6 million middle and high school students right now are reporting they're using e-cigarettes. The question in harm reduction is, where are they getting them? Where are they getting them? They're not getting them in my dispensary. They're not getting them in legal dispensaries who follow the rules. Because what? Look at this CMS decision. We're going to reward those dispensaries, those hemp-derived individuals that are doing it all the right way, child-proof packaging, child-resistant labels. Mm-hmm. We don't want Chester Cheeto on the label.
Yeah.
Clear labeling regulations, great safety, good manufacturing safety testing processes. So this is where the good players are now finally starting to turn the corner. And if we look at the opposite end of the population, the seniors, we already have numerous data across multiple states that the number one population using medical marijuana is age 60 and older. This is brand spanking new model here coming in Arizona, where marijuana, legal adult and medical sales of marijuana have been around since about 2014, 2016. But now, just a few independent living communities in Arizona, think Snowbirds, marijuana kiosks for these seniors are going to begin populating in the independent senior living communities. So this is going to see those seniors who are living in the communities. The kiosks in this model, this is a retailer called Life is Chill, right? Hemp Haven can do this. The retailer is now moving into these senior living communities where they are going to set up kiosks where seniors can learn about cannabis as medicine, and it will also give them directions on how to order cannabis products for delivery.
Wow.
Hemp Haven delivers.
Yeah.
So this is a new model that has never been seen in America. Arizona is taking the first step to provide both education in the community that's using medical marijuana at a high rate, while also it would be the same as, I'm sure that if you visited a hospital or had, you know, been in the hospital or had a loved one in the hospital recently, when you're getting ready to discharge, what do? They, if you need follow-up care, continual care, tertiary care, prevention in the community, they give you a list of providers. Here's where you're going for your physical therapy. Here's your pharmacy selection sometimes. Here's your home health selection. You decide where you're going to have follow-up. So this is a model built on referrals from the medical community, but now this kiosk approach is targeting at the population that is using medical marijuana the most in Arizona. They're going to help these seniors make informed decisions, because what is our model? Harm reduction. We don't want seniors to be harmed. We're seeing the largest population visiting us from our referral sources are our seniors. They're looking to either treat some of their complications, their wellness issues. They're looking to maybe reduce or even eliminate their prescription drug use. And we point them in the direction. Have you spoken with your provider? You need to. That comes to us as a standard now, because recall that President Biden's 2023 bill, the Medical Marijuana and Research Expansion Act, removed liabilities from physicians to, even though it still sits on Schedule One, this bill that President Biden implemented in 2023 removed liabilities from physicians to discuss marijuana with their patients.
They didn't have to
pretend like it didn't exist anymore.
I don't want to hear you. Yeah. Right. So this is coming from the legislation that has been moving from the perspective of marijuana. Is it legal, not legal? We're kind of ignoring that right now. And nothing is more evident than the fact that this Arizona model, this has to happen everywhere. Because when you have a legal state, Virginia is a legal state. Absolutely. It's soon to be an adult legal state, but it has been a medical legal state. We get questions all the time from our seniors who come to see us. Either they have A, already obtained their medical marijuana certification, and they have access to the medical marijuana dispensaries in Virginia, or B, they don't want to use their certification, or they have questions about obtaining their certification. So it's here. Now, again, the medical model is finally catching up, and in a way that makes my little community nurse heart very happy, because we're bringing education back into the community where we haven't been able to provide the right type of education when we're referencing cannabis, because it's been taboo.
Yeah.
Taboo. Don't talk about your doctor with it. Right, until recently, and don't talk about it in circles where you're just perceived as a stoner.
Don't ask, don't tell.
Don't ask, don't tell from the cannabis side, but you're going to be able to smell it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I recall that I attended a cannabis conference numerous years ago where the title of it was a cannabis nurse from Israel, who her name was Inbal Sorkin, and she presented on the fact that in Israel, every patient in this particular, or I should say every resident, gets a small dose of cannabis, where medical marijuana has been legal in Israel for almost 20 years, believe it or not. But Inbal's presentation was entitled "The Happiest Place on Earth," because the metrics indicated there were no increases in falls, no increases in drug-drug interactions, and consider all the drugs that seniors could be on. And the alternative side of that was there were reductions in anxiety medicines and depression medicines and sleep medicines, and all the seniors were happy and healthy and participated in events and actually ate their food. They actually ate the meals that were given to them. And this is where the senior community is discovering that quality of life using medical cannabis in appropriate amounts with the appropriate dose, the appropriate mixture of cannabinoids, the appropriate route of administration, this equals homeostasis. And boy, do seniors need that right now.
Yeah.
Another population needing this is military veterans. Florida has been on the move as their medical marijuana program expands. Florida just passed a bill in which lawmakers just passed a bill. It's heading now to Governor DeSantis's desk to provide discounted medical marijuana cards for military veterans, because we've known for decades that marijuana can support veterans, especially those diagnosed with PTSD.
Yes.
One of the sponsoring representatives here was Susan Valdez, a Republican, and Michelle Salzman, another Republican down here. This bill was approved unanimously by their committees, by their legislature. And the money quote here is, "Medical cannabis has shown promise in alleviating symptoms commonly experienced by military veterans, like managing chronic pain, alleviating the effects of PTSD, improving sleep, and reducing the dependency on opioids. The bill will now reduce their fee that used to be $75 a year." I think it went down to $15. That's a $60 a year savings. So it's also supporting their financial health. As we know that veterans struggle with many things in this economy. So Florida's on the move. Maryland is on the move. Just a few days ago, Maryland senators have approved a bill to allow firefighters and rescue workers use medical marijuana while off duty.
Wow.
I think back to my friend Brandon.
I was just thinking about Brandon,
Brandon was Normal's activist, the National Organization for Marijuana Laws, the Virginia's advocate of the year because Brandon was a firefighter who lost his job because he had a medical marijuana card. And it was a very big fiasco. And I can't help but think that this is just a fallout. The early adopters, right, we're the ones that take the arrows, the punishments. The process in cannabis is the punishment. This is interesting because the state law is now going to be allowed them to use it because they won't be penalized. Penalties cannot include discipline, discharge, or otherwise discriminate against the fire and rescue public safety employee with respect to the employee's compensation, terms and conditions of privileges of employment based solely on a positive screening of the THC metabolite. We're moving into following the science because here is where firefighters will be benefited because, of course, they endure pain. They see some, I'm sure, I was horrified by my own work in medical intensive care, ICU, mm-hmm. Some extraordinarily shocking activity. So firefighters, I'm sure, first on the scene, first responders,
yes.
They face all this every day. That they're on board their fire services. So we're to the point we already know that a bill was passed by Governor Youngkin that included state employees, but that didn't happen, allowing them to use their medical marijuana product with a state legal card. That didn't happen until last year, when it was discovered that in the first initial wording of the law that allowed patients in the United in Virginia to use medical marijuana, they specifically didn't state including state employees. So because of that, that is just one of the fallout of where Brandon got caught up. And these are the loopholes that need to be closed. So now Maryland is on board with their fire and rescue. Even the police are on board. There is a police organization that sees the marijuana harm reduction model. There is a police group called LEAP, Law Enforcement Action Partnership, and they have published an op-ed that says every hour an officer spends on simple marijuana cases is an hour not spent on investigating real crime. And they say that 11 of the 11.8 million arrests in the United States for drug-related offenses since 2011, over 80% of them are involving simple possession. Simple, 80%. You've got it on you. So, again, those that are looking at the harm reduction model, in this case, we're looking at how to best use resources, and those resources need to be where the law enforcement needs to be. And that's going to roll over into the judicial system. We're not going to be incarcerating these people. So now we're going to have different lawyer, court procedures, you know, standards, benchmarks, lab testing procedures. It's incredible. One of the most significant things that's happening just yesterday, actually I was listening, and this is coming off a Supreme Court a case that we talked about where several years ago a man named Hamani was arrested for marijuana possession because he was a medical marijuana patient, but he also had a gun in his car. It was in the locked glove compartment, but because it was in his car and he had marijuana because he had just come from the medical marijuana, the state legal medical marijuana dispensary,
yeah.
The Supreme Court is now taking up that argument. And this was on video live yesterday. I was listening in to some of the arguments. And the Supreme Court justices seemed very skeptical of the Department of Justice's legal defense because their thought is that if you have marijuana on you, or if you say in your application that you used your medical marijuana card holder legally in the state, mm-hmm. you're denied a federal arms registration, a gun permit. So the Supreme Court justices are making some interesting comments. I'll end with this. Neil Gorsuch, which is, of course, one of the most recent Trump appointees, said that the notion that there is a mere fact that a drug is illegal means its usage makes a person inherently dangerous raises complicated questions about that standards applied according to the entire Controlled Substance Act. Excuse me, those that are on a fentanyl patch, we encourage you not to drive, but do we deny you a gun, per se? So where are we going with this? And then, of course, some of the Supreme Court justices are asking questions about owning a gun and how this amendment, this First Amendment, Second Amendment, was implemented during the time when they ran guns and whiskey together. So we're bringing alcohol back into the equation because we do know who were our original hemp colonies. Why, George Washington, plantation owner, and Thomas Jefferson, writer of the Declaration of Independence, mm-hmm. and plantation owner up there in Monticello, what did they grow on their plantations? Why, it was hemp.
Mm-hmm.
But if you say that you are using hemp right now, even though it's federally legal, it's still considered cannabis. And that's where I got caught up. So big things are happening in both hemp world. We spoke mostly today about marijuana, and that's where actually most of the changes are happening rapidly, and that's causing people to come to us with lots of questions. And even our healthcare community needs to be supported, and that's what our role is in the community, to support everyone who has questions and concerns about cannabis.
Always good to see you, man. Dr. Denise Foster from Hemp Haven Wellness, 726 Carrotoke Highway.
People.
In Moyock, North Carolina. HempHavenWellness.com is her website. Go see her. Dr. D and her team of cannabis nurses open 7 days a week, Sunday through Wednesday, 11 a.m. till 7 p.m., Thursday, Friday, Saturday, extra hour, 11 a.m. till 8 p.m. Follow her on TikTok at HempHaven Cannabis Nurse, HempHavenWellness.com. That website once again. She'll be back with us soon on WNIS.